One thing patients always forget is the microbiome changes within 24 hours. So what you saw 6 months ago may not be what's there today. Microbes multiply, replicate every 20 minutes. And a lot of it is influenced by what you're eating.
Welcome back to the Good Clean Nutrition Podcast. In part one, Dr. Vivian Asamoah helped us unpack the biology of the gut-brain connection. Today, we continue that conversation with a food-first focus. She explains how she and her team use nutrition and personalized care to restore gut function. We also dive into how integrative care, not quick fixes, can create lasting change. Welcome to Dr. Ginger's Plate. Today's takeaway, fiber is critical to your health. Dr. Asamoah reminded us that gut healing takes time, and the best place to start is with your food. Instead of grabbing a fiber supplement, think about how you can integrate fiber into your diet using food. With that in mind, I want to share one of my favorite high fiber recipes. It's a banana ginger oats that takes just 5 minutes to whip up. You just cook half a cup of rolled oats with a cup of soy milk or milk of your choice and a ripe banana. Simmer it, mash in the banana, stir in a little cinnamon, grated ginger, and vanilla for flavor. This quick recipe has almost 8 grams of fiber and makes a really great breakfast. To boost the fiber even more, you can add a tablespoon of chia seeds for another 5 grams, half a cup of berries for another 4 grams. Ground flaxseed adds 3 grams per tablespoon, and nuts like almonds or walnuts adds another 2 grams. Just one or two of these options can double the fiber and bring the meal to over 15 grams. You mentioned testing, which isn't covered by insurance, so maybe walk me through that.
In terms of testing, I think we go for a personalized approach, but in today's era of biohacking ginger, everybody wants to know. There are a couple things when it comes to microbiome testing, but a lot of the comprehensive testing, and not just stool, just general specialty functional testing, is typically not covered by insurance. They're not necessarily CLIA approved, and that's like our standard lab that analyzes the tests and makes sure that they can duplicate and replicate, and it gives us consistent results within certain parameters and standard deviations. So they're generally not approved. FDA does not regulate them in that way. They're just independent labs. They tend to be expensive, unfortunately. So I wish we would get to a place where we can agree on the best tests with the most evidence, and insurance accepts it, and we're able to provide our patients with a lot more information. So for some of those reasons, it makes testing prohibitive or only available to those who can afford it, which doesn't seem fair. There's an array of information that you can get about gut health and digestion and absorption through standard, traditional, conventional labs that are CLIA approved. Always a good idea to go in that direction. There's also testing overwhelm. So we also try and pace the testing. One microbiome test, you can discuss it for months and months and months and generate just so much information, because you could focus on, okay, this is what's happening in the gut, and these are the microbes that we think are involved in insulin resistance. And these ones we see a lot in anxiety and depression. So you could really break it down and work on different aspects. But one thing patients always forget is the microbiome changes within 24 hours. So what you saw 6 months ago may not be what's there today. Microbes multiply, replicate every 20 minutes. And a lot of it is influenced by what you're eating. Did you go to Japan and spend 4 weeks eating sushi? And what does your microbiome look like? And then you return to the States, or you went to Mexico and got a traveler's diarrhea, and now you've got Giardia or something like that. So it changes a lot. And I think people have to understand that it is a dynamic process. It's not static at all.
It makes it really fascinating, but also really complex. And I think one challenge that we're at culturally with nutrition right now is trying to biohack or oversimplify.
I agree with you 100%. We're all in kind of this data collecting phase to really provide very targeted therapy that is going to be prescription based. Because I think the targeted therapy is going to be so potent that it's not a supplement that you're just going to be buying over the counter, kind of like GLP-1, extremely targeted molecule, I think that's what we're going to see with microbiome therapeutics. We're going to get very targeted.
Introducing Wonder Gut, Orgain's delicious probiotic drink mix that supports digestion, immune health, and overall gut happiness. It's packed with clinically studied probiotics, prebiotics, and plant fiber, all in one easy scoop. Find it at Orgain.com. I work with a lot of naturopaths and integrative specialists that don't use medications. So I wonder the role of medications in your treatment.
I do use prescription medication when needed. And it's case by case. It's not always a last resort. Sometimes it is the first resort. I think some of the data that we see in terms of cognitive behavioral therapy and gut hypnotherapy and all of that is really strong and very promising and very good, but it takes time. That's a behavioral change. That's going to take time. And if I notice that my patient is extremely anxious or having a lot of visceral hypersensitivity, just a ton of bloat and a ton of pain, I think some of the best data is on tricyclic antidepressant low dose amitriptyline and SSRIs. I have been surprised by just a very low dose. So we're not using depression doses, right? You're usually starting amitriptyline at a fairly low dose, 10 milligrams up into about 30, 40. SSRIs at a very, very low dose and go slowly. I have been pleasantly surprised by how effective these medications can be for some of our patients. I say use everything in your toolbox. That multidisciplinary approach helps the patient. And I always say, if your leg's broken, you ain't gonna use turmeric to fix it. You want an orthopedic surgeon. And so the way I explain this to patients, we kind of want to reframe and reset that parasympathetic, sympathetic activity, that fight or flight response that's going on. And I'll say it's not long-term. I want to give it at least 3 months to see whether it's working. And after 90 days, they're like, nothing. I stop it. I do not leave a medication on, especially a neuromodulator, when my patient has no benefit or potentially has side effects. But if I see there's benefit, then I say, well, let's give this at least a 12 to 18 month trial as we are working on nutrition, on lifestyle, on sleep, on hormones, and all those other things.
I've had this a lot where a doctor prescribes antibiotics and people will run it by me and be like, oh, I'm so upset. They're prescribing this antibiotic. I know antibiotics are bad. And I'm like, but if you have a bacterial infection, you might need an antibiotic. So I do think there's a level of open-mindedness and knowing that integrative practitioners still practice medicine.
Absolutely. And that's why we have to collaborate. I've worked with nutritionists and dietitians ever since I opened my practice. Actually, in training and fellowship, I asked to be on the nutrition team. I have just embraced a world that I can offer to my patients much more than just a prescription. So dietitian, healthcare practitioner, acupuncturist, pelvic floor therapist, GI psychologist, I work with all of them.
I do think that there's this messaging right now. We need to have all doctors learn about nutrition. And of course, doctors should learn about nutrition. And dietitians, I mean, we spend 2, 4, 6, 8 years just doing nutrition. So I think more than like doctors have to learn everything and know everything about nutrition, it's while they need to have a interdisciplinary team that they can refer to if they need.
Ginger, you are my sister from another mother. I believe the same thing 100%. And it goes both ways, right? Dietitians shouldn't feel like they're in a silo and have to deal with a patient who's lost 40 pounds and has been having diarrhea and hope that an elimination diet is going to fix it. It's not. You need to refer, right? Because this is beyond your scope of expertise and you need to figure out if something else is going on. And those are the amazing collaborative dietitians and nutritionists that I love working with because they're like, hey, Dr. V, something is off. I'm going to keep seeing this patient, but can you see them?
It's such a great point. I wish I had a dollar for every time I say you need a GI specialist, you need a PCP. So I, as a dietitian, need to practice within my scope and get people to the right care team because I do believe strongly in the care team, even if you're assembling it yourself. If anyone listening is feeling overwhelmed because this is a lot and they're dealing with gut issues or mood issues, what's a small but meaningful step they could take in their lives right now?
I actually think it is just take a moment to acknowledge your symptoms and what's going on, but also acknowledge that you are not alone and you are not crazy. Because I think this is the biggest thing I hear from my patients who've come to me after seeing their third, their fourth, their fifth, not just GI, but whatever other provider, that they are so affected by this. I mean, the impact on the quality of life when you have a gut-brain axis disorder is huge. You're anxious, constantly looking for a bathroom, never know when the pain is going to hit, don't want to travel with your family because you're not sure the foods are safe. Like, it affects your life and causes really this anxiety that you start doubting yourself. You really start thinking, is it truly all in my head? Is it just me? So I think one of the first steps is acknowledging that it is biological. Like, there's science. The neuroscientists have studied this. The gastroenterologists are talking about it. Our dietitians are talking about it. And you are not alone and you are not crazy. Let's start by acknowledging that, because we have come a long way in our practice and in our field in terms of how we have reacted and responded to our patients with functional gut disorders. And I think it's in part because we are frustrated. We have not known what kind of therapies to provide. And our medical therapies and our prescriptions have not been working great. Not for everyone. We haven't understood how personalized this was to every individual. They have to start there. It's a healing process, because you're frustrated and you feel like you've been belittled and not heard. You want to give up. So I'm saying sorry to our patients with functional gut-brain axis disorders, that we haven't been focused on this and we are going to do better.
Thank you for that. I think a lot of people really need to hear that, and it's going to make a difference. We need more practitioners like you in the world. Today's conversation with Dr. Asamoah was such a powerful reminder that gut health isn't just about digestion. It's about every aspect of your health. From the food you eat to how you sleep, move, and manage stress, your gut is constantly responding to the world around you. And thanks to providers like Dr. Asamoah, we now have a deeper understanding of how personalized nutrition, therapeutic supplementation, and integrative care can help restore balance in that gut-brain connection. What stood out to me most was the message that healing isn't one size fits all. Whether it's easing back into fiber-rich foods, finding the right probiotic strain, or integrating mindfulness into your daily routine, your path to better gut health should be as unique as you are. And most importantly, you don't have to do this alone. As always, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Clean Nutrition Podcast. Be sure to follow and leave a review if you enjoyed this episode.